Welcome to Advancement Daily's interview series. Today, I welcome Kestrel Linder, co-founder and CEO of GiveCampus, an online fundraising and volunteer management platform for educational institutions, which currently serves over 800 clients across the world. Kestrel is a regular speaker on the evolution of technology, the future of philanthropy, and the engagement of millennials and post-millennials. He graduated from Johns Hopkins University in 2005 and holds a master's degree from Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. Thank you for joining us today, Kestrel.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
So, Kestrel, many of the people I speak with in this interview series started their companies after years of being fundraising practitioners. But your trajectory is rather different. You started the company because giving back to your alma mater was a rather coarse experience. You were actually working as a government defense and intelligence consultant at Booz Allen Hamilton. Tell us about how you and your co-founder, Michael Kong, arrived at the notion that a social fundraising platform was the product you wanted to create to solve this problem.
Yeah, the founding story. So as you mentioned, I started GiveCampus with a good friend of mine from college, Mike Kong. Mike, at the time that we started GiveCampus or started to talk about what became GiveCampus, was a software engineer at Facebook. And in 2013, he and I started to have a bit of a recurring conversation about how difficult it was to give money back to our alma mater. We felt it was a cumbersome process. It wasn't very engaging. And really, for us, it boiled down to the fact that our alma mater wasn't meeting us where we were spending our time. It wasn't engaging with us in a manner that we were most accustomed to. You know, it wasn't happening on social media. It wasn't easy to facilitate a transaction. It wasn't social. It wasn't mobile. And for us, that seemed to be a pretty big disconnect. We felt that giving money back to any nonprofit, but especially to one's alma mater, should not only be easy, but it should also be fun. And a piece of the inspiration for us actually came from my wife, who's an independent documentary filmmaker. Around this time, she was involved in running a Kickstarter campaign to help provide funding for a film that she was directing and producing. And as Mike and I were having this conversation about how not easy it was to give back to our alma mater, we saw what my wife was doing on Kickstarter, and we saw this sort of magical phenomenon occur whereby all sorts of people, friends and family of friends and friends of family of friends, were learning about this Kickstarter campaign. They were being engaged by the content surrounding the campaign, and they were contributing money to the campaign. And the light bulb moment that we had was, what if it was that easy? What if it was that fun? What if it was that social to make a donation to your alma mater? Wouldn't that help solve this problem that we have been seeing? And that's how it all got started.
Well, it sounds like you owe your wife a lot of credit for introducing you to what would be the inspiration for GiveCampus and Kickstarter. But to distill GiveCampus's concept, it's really removing friction. It's removing challenges to making gifts online to people's alma maters, making the experience more akin to how they're interacting with each other in other spaces, whether it be in the nonprofit sector, doing business online in the private sector, or just in their general lives. And of course, making it fun and enjoyable was also front of mind for you and Mike. Without making it enjoyable for donors, they would be less inclined to come back to the nonprofit organization, essentially less inclined to use your interface, use the GiveCampus social fundraising platform. So being CEO for GiveCampus wasn't a full-time job, though, when you first started. What was the turning point that made you decide this was a worthwhile venture?
Yeah, Mike and I were both fish out of water. Neither of us had any background or experience whatsoever in fundraising. Neither of us had any direct experience working for a college or a university. We've both obviously gone to school, but that's about the extent of our experience. We'd been solicited, we'd been engaged, so we were familiar with some of those things from the perspective of a donor, but we really didn't know anything about the fundraising industry, about development. Development and Alumni Relations. So before we jumped off the cliff and really decided to go all in on this, we went on a listening tour. We traveled around the country over the course of about 6 months, and we basically met with anybody working in development at a college or university who would have a meeting with two guys that they'd never heard of before and who had no professional connection to what they were doing whatsoever. And when we had those meetings, and we were really fortunate, one thing we learned early on is fundraisers are very generous people and really generous not only with their time, but with their wisdom and insights. We would ask them a series of questions, and one of those questions would basically be, so why aren't you using Kickstarter or GoFundMe or something like that? Why aren't you tapping into these technologies and these platforms that exist in the world and that are really revolutionizing the fundraising operations and the funding methods for so many other organizations and industries, including, frankly, for a lot of other nonprofits? And what we heard time and time again from mostly annual giving professionals was Kickstarter is really cool, or GoFundMe is really interesting. And I wish I could do something like that. But it's important to us that the technology we use be technology that is designed specifically for us. As a university, we have specific needs, we have specific requirements, we have ways that we do business that are fundamentally different from how a lot of other organizations, including a lot of other nonprofits, do their business. And so we need software built for us. And so the natural next question that we would ask was, well, what if we built something like Kickstarter or like GoFundMe? What if we helped make it that easy for your constituents to give? What if we create a platform specifically for you to engage your constituents in that sort of way? Would you be interested in that? And the resounding chorus was, yes, we would be interested. So Mike and I took that after that listening tour. We went back to the drawing board. We built the prototype for our first product, and the rest is history.
Obviously, the listening tour you speak of was critical to launching the company. Through interacting with your target market, you learned that current solutions didn't meet the needs of higher education, and you learned what was necessary to gain their business. But your company was founded in 2014 and serves over 100 higher education institutions and private high schools. How were you able to grow your client base in an industry that is slow to process change? And how are you looking to accelerate your growth into the future?
Yeah, I think, you know, our growth, which has been spectacular over the last 5 years and continues to be on a very promising trajectory. You know, we are seeing about one new school sign up to use GiveCampus every day, Monday through Friday of every week of the year, which is very encouraging and exciting for us. If I had to, you know, boil it down to, you know, one or two key ingredients that have really fueled that growth, I think I would start with focus. One thing that differentiates us and that I think has been instrumental to our success is that all we focus on at GiveCampus is fundraising for nonprofit educational institutions. So we're not focused on building software and delivering services to other types of nonprofits. We're not focused on designing solutions for schools outside of the fundraising and alumni relations space. We're only focused on fundraising for schools. And that focus allows us to develop deeper insights about the needs and challenges and priorities that fundraisers like you are facing, which enables us to build better products and deliver better service to the schools that we work with. And ultimately, that is what drives most of our growth. Schools that we're working with who are happy with our service, they're happy with our product, they're deriving measurable value from those things. And as you know, Jonathan, schools talk to one another. So if one school talks to another school, talks to another school, and they have nice things to say about us, that can really drive a lot of our growth. The other thing that's been really important to us and has contributed, I think, in a very meaningful way to our growth is one of our company's core operating philosophies. And this is not one that we invented, but one that we borrowed from other companies. And that's just to spend a lot of time talking to our users, talking to the schools that use our platform, talking to donors, talking to volunteers, asking them, what do you want? And iterating like crazy based on what we learn. Again, generating really deep insights about how we can make their lives, their experiences easier, how we can make them happier, how we can make them love us even more, how can we deliver even more value over time based on the specific job or jobs that you're trying to do at your school or institution. So this idea of really almost over-engaging with our users, with the schools that we support and their constituents by asking questions, and asking even more questions has just allowed us to uncover a lot of information, a lot of deep insights that allow us to be better. And turns out, big surprise, that helps you grow.
Well, Kestrel, it seems like the focus on your niche of fundraising for universities and K through 12 schools begets better service to your target market, which begets happy clients, which leads to positive press and new client acquisition. Also, proactively assessing client needs by communicating and engaging with your clients and asking questions every day play the largest role in your growth. Now, outside of gaining market share, can you tell us about how you address some of the most challenging issues facing your company?
Yeah, well, there's a loaded question. Certainly you alluded to this earlier, Jonathan. Especially in the higher education space, we serve both K-12 schools and colleges and universities, and this dynamic is present in both places, but I think especially with universities, especially larger universities, especially public universities, there's a fair amount of red tape to cut through, and there's good reason for that, right? These are big, important institutions with, in many cases, well-recognized brands all over the country, if not all around the world. And so there's reason, there's cause for them to be a little bit risk averse or a little bit change averse. So we completely understand that. But it is a challenge to, I think, any business like ours that is trying ultimately to sell products or sell services to those folks to help them navigate their own internal processes, their own internal politics, because obviously we could never hope to have a deep understanding of how a particular university operates. So we have to glean that information from an internal champion, from someone who is motivated because of their job or their responsibilities or the goals that they're trying to accomplish in a particular at a particular moment in time. And they want to use our product or our services to do that, to help guide them and assist them as they make the case internally. That's been something that we've learned. I think we're continuing to learn how to do better and better, but it's been really important to ensuring that our growth hasn't stalled, particularly as we've started to do more and more business, with some very large universities. The other thing that's a challenge for us, and that I'm sure is a challenge for any growing enterprise, is finding the right people to be on the team. We're a 35-person company today, at 5 years old. I expect we'll probably be around a 50-person organization by the end of this year. And one thing we invest considerable company resources in is our recruiting, interviewing, and onboarding process, trying to make sure that we're finding people not just who are smart and hardworking, but who really care about the mission of our organization. At Give Campus, we're trying to help schools like Western Carolina and many others raise money more effectively and more efficiently so that they can advance their mission, so they can drive higher quality education, so they can make that high quality education more affordable and more accessible to students around the country and around the world. And we want to make sure that we're reflecting that and those values inside of our company, that we're staffing our team with folks who aren't here just because. They're here because they really care about the work that we are engaged in. They're really excited by it. They're really energized by it. Because at the end of the day, life is short. There are, lots of opportunities for smart, hardworking people. Finding the opportunity that will make it hard to go to sleep at night and that will wake you up in the morning because you're so excited to go do more of it, I think that's really where the magic happens.
So ultimately, your biggest challenges are the challenges your clients are facing, working within the framework provided by government regulations or maybe their own internal policies. And of course, hiring the right personnel, those who believe in your mission and the mission of your clients, is critical to the success of any business. And that can certainly be a challenge. Speaking of challenges, the digital fundraising space is becoming more competitive. More companies are providing solutions specifically tailored to higher education and K-12 fundraising. How do you foster innovation within your company, like one of your most recent products, GC Connect? And what is the vision for the future of the company?
Yeah, we focus a lot at GiveCampus on, this idea that even though we've had a lot of success over the last 5 years, the journey in front of us is a lot longer than that. Our company is trying to become synonymous with fundraising for education. When Jonathan, you or your successor shows up for work 10 years from now, we want to be the software that powers and enables all of your most important, your most meaningful, your most mission-critical work. So we've got a lot still left to accomplish. And it can be easy, I think, or at least very tempting to rest on one's laurels and kind of sit back and say, wow, we're working with 800 schools now. Let's coast for a little while. We try to aggressively fight that temptation and remind ourselves internally that we've got to keep innovating. As you mentioned, there are companies popping up now trying to do things in a similar way to the way that we're doing them and to build products that are similar to the products that we've built over the last 5 years. So competition, I think, is good. It's certainly there. It's certainly increasing. And for us to stay ahead of the curve, we have to continuously be asking ourselves, what can we do better and how can we drive more value, more meaningful value for the schools that we are working with? And you asked, how do we actually, try to drive that innovation? I don't think there's any one strategy that we adopt internally. It's more an ethos of let's keep innovating. But the one approach that we consistently take at GiveCampus that I think anyone in any industry would benefit from doing more of, including us, there's always room for more, is experimenting and almost striving for failure, striving to identify things, not because you planned to identify them, but because you stumbled across them. If you look at a lot of the most successful products, in the history of the U.S. economy, products and services, turns out a lot of those products weren't by design. They were discovered through a process of experimentation, through running A/B tests to see what works better, to see what people prefer, to identify things that you didn't know before. And we really try to embrace that at GiveCampus. We talk a lot at GiveCampus about how the absence of failure is the biggest red flag of all. And so if on a monthly or a quarterly or certainly an annual basis, we're not able to point to at least a handful of examples where we've kind of fallen flat on our face, well, that's actually probably a bigger problem than if we can point to a bunch of examples where we've fallen flat on our face. Because if you're not failing from time to time, you're probably not really pushing the boundaries of what's possible.
So, not being afraid to fail and constant experimentation are key takeaways for innovation at GiveCampus and surely any organization. Now, looking toward the future of fundraising and education, how do you see the profession evolving over the next decade, or what do you envision as the next big disruptor in the space?
Wow. Well, obviously we have all the answers to those questions and we have to keep them all a secret. No, I think, the world is changing very rapidly. Technology is changing very rapidly. People's behaviors and preferences and expectations are changing very rapidly. And fundraisers have a really, really tough job. They have to persuade people to first give them some of their time and attention to engage, and then to part ways with some portion of their disposable income. And that's a one-two punch that is really difficult to accomplish. That's not an easy task. You asked, what do I think the next big disruptor is going to be over the next decade or so in the fundraising field? And I think if I had to pick a single answer, it's personalization. I think because of how technology has evolved far outside of the fundraising space, people today in the 21st century, we're now into the 2020s, they don't only expect, they demand, they require an extraordinary amount of personalization. And if you're trying to capture my attention and hold my attention so that you can deliver a message to me and communicate with me and engage with me, I now in 2020 demand that that all be very highly personalized. And I think there's a lot of folks out there who are trying to come up with the technology silver bullet to address that. But part of me wonders if actually the biggest disruptor won't actually be a pure technology solution that helps you automate personalization so that you can do it at great scale to all of your constituents, not the solution that takes tons and tons of data and synthesizes it for you in real time so that you can do those things. But it actually might be fundraisers going back to the basics and sitting across the table from constituents, from donors, from non-donors, from students, from alumni, from faculty, from staff, and having conversations one-on-one or small group conversations to really better understand people's motivations, people's perceptions, the progress they want to see in the world, so that fundraisers can adopt the mentality of being agents of philanthropy for those individuals and help them on a journey to understand and recognize how a donation, whether that's a financial contribution or some other form of philanthropy, will help make positive progress in the direction that they want to see. So, short answer to your question, I think it's all about personalization. If I had to pick one thing that's going to really disrupt things, how we actually unlock that, I think we might be surprised and discover that it's a lot more going back to the basics than fancy 21st century technology.
Yeah, I think we're all chasing the dragon, trying to find the next technology solution that will raise more money at a lower cost, one that will help us be more sophisticated in our communication to all of our different segments in our populations, whether we're higher education or K through 12. I think we're all grappling with figuring out what's the next best shiny object out there. But it sounds like for you, really getting back to the basics, getting back to the root of fundraising, going back to the start. And personal relationships, sitting down with individuals, finding out what motivates them. Can we find good matches between organizational mission and personal priorities of constituents is really going to be a big game changer as we come full circle. But as we leave today's interview, what advice would you give entrepreneurs looking to start their own company in the fundraising space?
Ooh, advice for someone starting, wanting to start a business in the fundraising space. Don't do it. GiveCampus has it covered, so please stay away. Don't do it. No, I think my advice to anyone that is interested in or considering starting a business or starting any sort of venture is to, recognize that it's not for everybody, but if it is for you or you think it is for you, to try to think through the opportunity that you're facing, perhaps through a different lens than we're trained to utilize through a lot of our schooling and even professional development. And what I mean by that is we're always trained to evaluate risk. risk and to think about, well, what are the risks of doing this? What are the benefits of doing this, and what are the risks of doing this? And I don't think that's bad analysis to do. I think that's a useful exercise, but a much more useful exercise, certainly for me in my personal experience, was thinking about the opportunity cost of not doing this or not doing this now. And that was a conversation that I had with myself and had with my wife and with my family of, you know, at this moment in time, and this is now 5 or 6 years ago, yeah, there are risks to leaving the career path that I'm on and starting this company, but there's also a huge risk in not doing this. There's a huge opportunity cost there. I might never have an idea like this that I can go out and try to bring into the world. I might never have an idea with a friend who knows how to write code who can do it with me. And I think that lens, it would be my hopefully helpful piece of advice to anyone thinking about starting a business, whether in the fundraising space or somewhere else.
Well, thank you so much, Kestrel, for those invaluable insights. It was a pleasure having you. Thank you for talking about your company, managing a business, and of course, visioning for the future.
My pleasure, Jonathan.
If you want to hear more from industry-leading professionals, be sure to visit advancementdaily.com, where you'll be able to access all of our interviews as well as our archive of articles and publications. Happy fundraising!